This show is brought to you by SeatGeek, the perfect place to buy and sell tickets. Welcome to another edition of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, and I'm glad you're here because we've got a good one. Toronto Raptors all-star guard DeMar DeRozan will join the show. Plus, Vertical front office insider Bobby Marks and I will take a closer look at some of LeBron's cryptic tweets and examine what is going on in Oklahoma City right now. That and more on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, Chris Mannix.
He's DeMar DeRozan, Toronto Raptors all-star guard, and he joins me here on the podcast. DeMar, if I had told the teenage kid growing up in Compton, California, that he would be in the NBA, an all-star, and poised to make a really nice contract next year, what would he have said?
It's just one of them dreams that you hope and wish to come true, honestly. But to see it happen, it's still hard for me to believe a lot of things going on these days.
Compton, it evokes certain images in people's mind, rough images. What was life like for you back there and back then?
It was definitely a challenge. Every day was a challenge, having to stay away from distractions, stay away from negativity. You just got to find something that you're passionate about and that you can focus on and put all your energy towards that, because, everything will be a new challenge for you every single day. And that's what you face growing up, especially when that's all you know at a young age.
When you say the negativity, I mean, what specifically was some of the stuff that you had to deal with?
With gangs, being around violence, have to, see violence so much, see what it felt like losing, people close to you and, going through situations like that where you really don't understand it at a young age until you get older and you realize that, you just want a better life for yourself and for your family. So you just try to strive and put everything that you got into something that you love.
How did you avoid kind of getting lured into that life? How did you avoid all that tough stuff that was going on around you?
I think my mom and dad, they embedded a great conscience in me at a young age, understanding, right from wrong. So, growing up, I always understood, the right from wrong. You may see something, and you may not know exactly what's going on, but you kind of get that feeling of, this may not be completely right. Let me not do this. I think having that early on really helped me out a lot as I got older.
Was there a time in your young life, maybe when you were a teenager or even before then, where you did kind of have to make a choice to go down one path or go down the other?
Yeah. I think when I really got introduced to basketball and understanding that, basketball could take me out of Compton, take me out of L.A., take me out of California, you start seeing different places that open your imagination, and it showed you that it's more to life than, just the city that you come from. And, you want more. You want to be able to see more. So I think, with basketball helping me do that, it definitely took my mindset somewhere else.
You're an athletic guy. You probably could have played a number of different sports coming up. What was it that drew you into basketball?
I really wanted to play football at a young age. I really, really wanted to play football. My dad wanted me to play football. My mom hated it. She did not want me to play football. She said she couldn't take me, getting hit and, seeing me lay on the field or something like that. But basketball was just one of them things, growing up, my whole family played it, always watched it, always was so into it. And I just grew a passion for it, growing up watching Jordan play. Wanted to be like Mike, try to jump from imaginary free throw lines as a kid. And, things like that definitely helped grow my imagination. And, with that, my passion grew as I got older.
How many times did you try to dunk from the free throw line as a kid?
All the time. It's just a matter if I was going to get close or not. you go back to the Space Jam movie and, you see him stretch out, dunking from the free throw line. You always wanted to do that, but it was always fun trying.
Were there safe places to play in Compton? I mean, was the basketball court, was that considered for you a safe place to be?
Yeah, it definitely was, because, back home, if that's what you do, everybody respected it. Even when I was in high school, even though, I lived in a city where it was full of gangs, a lot of gangs came and watched me play, and there was never no issue. you know, never a problem because everybody just wanted to see good, exciting basketball and, you know, wanted to see somebody make it out. So that definitely was a getaway, safe area.
Did you know a lot of guys or any guys really with, you know, that athletic ability that maybe was similar to what you had that didn't go down the path that you did that maybe wrong? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know plenty of guys. Not even just with basketball, you know, with football as well. You know, I've seen so many from track and field, you know, guys I grew up with early on that just didn't have a chance and went a different route and, you know, they lost their opportunity. You know, it always sucks when you have to see friends, you know, that you grew up, you know, that could have made it, could have been something in life, but took the wrong angle. You know, you definitely see it all the time.
What was the difference then between you and them?
You know, I think just with me, I had family members, you know, that was close to me that had talent that could have made it, but they took the wrong route, you know, and they really told me early on, you know, when you're a kid, you really don't know why they telling you this, like, don't do what I did. I did this, and look where I'm at now. You know, you really don't understand that till you really older and you look back and be like, yo, that advice that, you know, my cousin or my uncle gave me at this point in time really was critical because now I understand that one wrong move could just mess up everything. And I think just having family members always in my ear telling me the right from wrongs, what not to do, showing me their mistakes really helped me out.
Best basketball player in your family besides you?
Besides me, that's a good question. I'm so above everybody now. So I always talk trash to anybody in the family. I don't know.
But you had you had family members that played. You said they were good, right? I mean, the guys that older than you just didn't have the direction.
Yeah. That was it. But you know, my whole family was athletes and definitely was in their sports bed. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm gonna get an answer for that. I'm gonna figure that out.
If you weren't an athlete, what do you think you'd be doing right now?
I swear, it would be something competitive. I don't know. I'd probably be in there. If they got a chess lead for people, I'd probably be, you know, doing that, you know, in the chess league, playing, competing, doing something with a competitive nature. You know, I'm not sure exactly what it will be, but it'll definitely be something competitive.
Okay, there are a lot of competitive things to do. You go to chess?
No, I'm just saying that'd probably be like, you know, it'd be an option.
You know, when you get to high school and you start playing the way you play, obviously you have options about where you want to go to college. USC obviously is close, but were there other reasons to choose USC?
You know, honestly, just be close, stay home. You know, I never was away from home for a long period of time. And, you know, I just thought in my mind, you know, if I make it to the NBA, this may be my last time being able to play in front of family on a consistent basis and, you know, being able to get up and go home whenever I want it. So, you know, I just said, you know what, let me go to college home. It's a great school to go to, and I'm home. You know, if I go to the league, there's no telling where I may be, you know. So that kind of played a big part, and, you know, I think it worked out well because, you know, I got drafted to Canada.
Sure did. When you're at home and you're that close to everything you kind of grew up with, what was there enough separation for you, or were there times when it felt like you were almost too close to the old life?
No, it was perfect for me, but, you know, I think I didn't realize, you know, how perfect being away from home would be for me until I got drafted. You know, it was great being home, but not really realized how beneficial it was for me once I left from home, really just to hone in and just work on me growing as a person, as a man, and, you know, as a basketball player.
You're a kid from California. You get drafted by Toronto. I mean, it's night and day in terms of climates and lifestyle, I would imagine. I mean, what was the transition like for you?
Man, it was tough. I told somebody one day when I first came, it was snowing. I didn't know how to wear the right layers of clothes to stay warm. I'm still wearing Chuck Taylors in the snow. It was just, you know, I'm still dressing like I'm in Southern California in the middle of January when, you know, the middle of January, Toronto is a whole different monster. But, you know, that was the adjustment.
How much money did you have to spend on winter clothes in that first year?
See, that's the thing. I probably had one warm coat, everything else. You know, I used to tell myself, like, you know, I don't know exactly what to get, but I'm not going to be outside for too long. I'm either in and out or in the car or going in the arena. So I really didn't know exactly what to get, you know. So I really didn't get too much winter clothes.
What's the worst outfit you went out in a winter storm with?
Probably just a regular sweater that you could wear on a 75 degree day, you know, not thick at all. You know, just some sweatpants and some flip flops with a pair of socks on, and I was freezing. From head to toe, I was just frozen.
From a basketball perspective, you're drafted by Toronto. It's a team that had only had one over 500 years since Vince Carter had left. Were you excited? Were you anxious? I mean, what were you feeling at that moment?
It was real positive for me, honestly, because, you know, the reception I got back from the fans, you know, that's when Twitter first was coming around, you know, the reception I was getting from the fans, everybody in Canada, you know, I just felt wanted from the gate. Even before I was drafted, you know, I remember draft night, and I just got a positive vibe from everything with Toronto, and, you know, it made it comfortable as soon as I got drafted. Like, you know, I really was on it.
What do you remember about your rookie year?
Me being the youngest and only rookie on the team, every single day, every single thing was new to me. Living by myself, trying to figure out what to eat. just every day for me, my rookie year was something new of me learning, you know, life, you know, in the NBA. It's really tough. It's really not as easy as everybody think it is.
What was the hardest part of it?
I think in high school, you go from being a top player, one of the top players. In college, you go to be one of the top players. And in the NBA, none of that matters anymore. You know, it's a whole new stomping ground for you. You know, you're playing against grown men who been in the league 5 to 10 years plus. The knowledge of the game is just overwhelming. And, you know, you're just a kid trying to figure out, you know, let me not be late to this plane, or let me understand why we watch a film, or, you know, it was just so much was so new to me, and it was definitely a challenge.
When you first started playing, did you realize right away what it was going to take for you to really succeed? I mean, the level you're at right now, all-star, one of the best two guards now in the NBA, did you realize back then just how much it was going to take to get there?
No, you really don't think about it. You know, even me thinking about it now, you really don't put too much thought process in it, you know, while you're going along with it, because, you know, you just take it day by day. You know, that's one thing I always did. You know, I always listened. I always, whenever somebody told me what I need to work on, or how to get better, or how to do this or how to do that, you know, I just listened and took heed to it. And, you know, now that I look back at it, I'm glad I just listened and did everything that was asked of me, and even more, because it paid off. Because you really don't look at the whole thing of it. You know, you kind of take it day by day, and then you realize how much you really put into it.
Chris Bosh was the star of the team back then. I mean, what was your relationship like with him in that 1 year you played together?
It was great. You know, he helped me a lot. He definitely helped me with my confidence, pushing me. You know, he was tough on me. We was even laughing about it, you know, during the All-Star game. You know, when I was a kid, you know, listening and watching everything he do, and now we sitting on an All-Star bench together, you know. So it's definitely crazy just to see how, you know, how the cycle repeats itself. And, you know, I was just thankful for having a vet like him and having a superstar that I could come under and watch, even if it was for 1 year, because, you know, that helped me a lot.
When Bosh left and it changed kind of the direction of the franchise, I mean, you're still a young guy, second year in the league. Did you think at all, like, I've got to step up into a void here? I mean, how did your perception of your role change, if at all?
That's definitely how I felt. As soon as he left, you know, I felt like that was an opportunity for me, really, just to take advantage of it. And it's crazy. It's crazy even now. You know, I've been getting people showing me a tweet that I tweeted after Bosh left. I guess it was the day he left. I tweeted, "Don't worry, I got us." And I don't even remember tweeting it. But it's crazy because all the fans always bring back that tweet now to see how far we came, and, you know, see me, you know, stick through all the tough times. And, you know, because that's really how I felt once he left. Like, you know, don't worry, I got it. So I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity to continue to get better. I'm going to help this franchise win.
What's the best piece of advice any coach or player has given you since you've been in the NBA?
My high school coach always gave me great advice, you know, to this day. He just always told me, be myself. You know, don't let nobody change you, change your thought process. you know, and continue to work and get better every single year. As long as I do that, everything else will fall in place like I want it to. So I think that's one of the biggest things, you know, that was told for me, especially from my high school coach.
Do you feel like now there's a different level of stability with this organization? I mean, you got an all-star backcourt. Masai is the GM and one of the best in the NBA. Do you feel like there's a different level of stability now than maybe you had years prior?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And crazy thing about it, we still trying to build on it. We still got a long way to go. You know, everybody here, players, coaching staff, front office, we still feel like we haven't did anything yet. You know, we still got a long way to go. And we're going to continue to stay on track of doing that because we're just not settling just for where we're at now.
You guys are right behind Cleveland in the standings, but do you feel like you guys are respected as a true contender right now?
Me speaking for myself and the teammates, you know, we really don't look at it like that. We just try to go out there and play. But, you know, if you asking from an outsider perspective, no, I don't think we do. But that's perfectly fine. You know, that keeps us with a chip on our shoulder, not never being comfortable or being satisfied with the success that we have. So, you know, it's kind of a beneficial thing for us because, you know, that keeps us hungry.
I'll get you out of here with this, DeMar, and I appreciate the time. But do you – you know, you look at your future, and you're going to get, you know, offered a big contract at the end of the year. And I know it's not for another few months. You have to think about it. But is now that you've been in Toronto for as long as you have, do you consider it home? Do you want to be in Toronto in the long term?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that always been my goal. That was my mindset even when we was winning 22 games, you know, and it definitely haven't changed now. If anything, you know, I take more pride in putting that Toronto jersey on than anybody. You know, I try to go out there, exploit that every time I go out there and play. So, you know, I think that's evident as it is.
Do you have a better collection of winter clothes now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. you can't beat me. I'm beating the winter every time now.
Are you a winter guy, though, now? Or are you just still, do you still rush home?
I'm still not a winter guy. I still rush home. Still hearing Canadians these days complaining about the cold, so I can never get used to it.
Well, DeMar, I know you're busy. I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
No problem.
It's the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek is the only place I ever go to look for tickets to a game or to a concert. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked by value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed map to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get that $20 rebate, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code Mannix. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Mannix today.
Welcome back, Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, joined by Yahoo Sports Vertical front office insider, Bobby Marks. Do you miss being an assistant GM, Bobby? What part of being an assistant GM do you miss the most?
The games.
Yeah.
No, I actually don't miss it at all. I love, you know, the trade deadline, draft, free agency, all that, you know, putting the team together. But I don't miss waking up after a loss or losing three or four in a row and, you know, have to try to fix, you know, the problems on the court. So that aspect I do not miss. If I was in Golden State or San Antonio, I would certainly miss that right now, where those teams are. But, you know, right now I don't.
Team flights, though. I bet you miss team flights.
Well, I've actually kept my weight down because, I'm not eating at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning and eating these heavy steaks that they put on team flights and everything. And my sleep pattern is a lot better also.
All right. So I was in Cleveland over the weekend and I saw maybe the new evolution of what the Cavaliers are kind of becoming. They played Tristan Thompson at the five in the fourth quarter. They played LeBron at the four. And this is something I think that we're going to see more of with the Cavaliers. I mean, is this just a simple matter of math? Is Kevin Love, you know, going to wind up being the odd man out in Cleveland in these types of situations?
Well, this is the trend we're going to start seeing going forward. And what teams do now in the stretch run is they start to put sample lineups when it comes playoff time. They start to experiment with different lineups. And the Tristan Thompson at the five to close games is a lineup we're going to probably see going forward. With Love, you know, you take out the three games post-trade deadline, he has not been good at all. And is it a confidence matter? Is it his role there? How he fits in with Ty Lue? You know, we remember he missed most of the playoffs last year. There's only a small sample. So is Kevin Love a product of playing on a bad team in Minnesota, you know, where his stats were, you know, through the roof? When you come to a team with more talent, you know, things change a little bit.
Yeah, look, I think Kevin Love doesn't do himself any favors at times with the way he plays defensively. I mean, Jared Sullinger was running him over in the third quarter of that game. I don't think Ty Lue even had a choice to take Love out because, you know, Tristan Thompson around the same height, but Tristan Thompson is a bruiser who will be able to bang, you know, with some of the power forward centers that are out there. So if you are going to go small, you've got to have somebody in that lineup that can at least bang with the one big that's going to be in there. And Kevin Love just isn't that guy. I mean, I just watching Sullinger, he's a good player, but not a great player. Watching Sullinger just sort of power him down in the post and just knock him around in that third quarter. I mean, I didn't blame Ty for taking him out. As soon as he came out in the third quarter, I'm like, that's the last we're going to see of Kevin Love. I feel like if they want to keep playing in those small lineups with LeBron, that's what we're going to see. Kevin Love playing late into the third, maybe early into the fourth, then all of a sudden you see Thompson, you see LeBron, you see the small, more nimble lineup that I think allows Cleveland to get more possessions, which is what Ty Lue wants more than anything.
Well, the league is all about matchups, and it's not about who makes the most money should be on the court at the end of the games. And I give Ty a lot of credit for kind of going that way because it is hard when you have a max player, you have a former all-star, not to have him on a court at the end of the game. And what Tristan gives you is that, you know, they've got so many offensive threats on the court with LeBron and, you know, Kyrie, JR, you put them out there. But Tristan kind of gives them that glue guy that, you know, that kind of get your hands dirty, rebound the ball, set screens, you know, do a lot of the different things that maybe, you know, Kevin doesn't do. And if he gives you the best chance to win games, then you have to have him on the court at the end.
I tell you what, too, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but Cleveland's not the boogeyman anymore. Cleveland, even in the Eastern Conference, there's not this like look of fear when you walk in and you're seeing the Cavaliers on the other end of the court. Boston, after that game, to a man, they came out and said, you know, we played poorly, but we can play with these guys. We can beat these guys. And they have beaten them before. Toronto, I think, feels disrespected every single day. You know, no matter who they're playing, I think people think, the people in the Raptors locker room think that nobody believes they can actually win. I'm not convinced that one of those two teams can't give Cleveland a series. I'm not convinced that this cakewalk everyone sort of talked about for Cleveland in the Eastern Conference, that it actually is going to exist.
Well, I agree with you, and it's not going to be like last year. We haven't even talked about Miami.
Yeah.
You know, I know they've played some inferior teams, the last five games, but we have to figure out with the Bosch injury, if he's going to be back or if he's going to be gone for the year, because we can throw them into the mix with Boston and Toronto. Toronto, until they get out of the first round, is going to hang over their head. You know, we have not seen them do that the last couple of years. I love Boston. Boston wears you down. They're like Milwaukee last year. They kind of just throw a lot of different lineups at you. And when you get to the third quarter, early fourth, you're like a beaten man. So Cleveland, unlike last year, is not the clear runaway. You know, come playoff time, there is going to be a lot of competitiveness come April, May, and you know, we'll see where this goes.
Boston just moves the ball, man. I mean, they go around the perimeter, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 passes, and they're unselfish. You know, you watch them play compared to a number of other teams in the league, and I don't know if it's all coaching or if it's the mental makeup of the players on the roster, but you know, they're indifferent really to individual statistics. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is the unquestioned offensive star of that team. But any night, it's throw the ball out to Crowder for 3. When Kelly Olynyk was healthy, Sullinger has been better than I expected, much better than I expected at the start of the season. I mean, when I look at Boston, they need one more player to compete with the upper echelon teams in the NBA. But that system and the way they play, the unselfishness, it's incredible to watch.
Well, they've got a star in their coach. You know, that's their star that they have right now. And what he does so well is that he reacts during the game to the flow of the game. He is great as far as making in-game substitution, changing, you know, if they have to play a different style. And the one thing that concerns me with Boston is, do they have a closer at the end of games come playoff time when we get, you know, more towards a half court? Isaiah can if needed. But, you know, who is that other guy that's going to kind of step up here?
All right. Talk about Miami with me here for a second, because I'm not a huge believer in the Heat just because I don't know how much gas Dwayne Wade's going to have left in the tank when you get to a conference finals, if that's how far they wind up getting. Dragic has been kind of hot and cold. And you mentioned Bosch. We don't know when or if he's even coming back. Are you a bigger believer in Miami than I am?
Well, their winning streak right now has come against, you know, Philly twice, yeah. Phoenix. We throw them in the mix and everything. New York, I think, is in that group also. So it's kind of, let's see where they go over the next, you know, week or two. I like what they're doing with, you know, Johnson at the three, Dang at the four. You've got Whiteside coming off the bench. You've got 20 games here in a stretch where to see where this Heat team goes. Is it the three seed? Is it the four seed? But I do like. I see a lot of fresh legs in Joe Johnson. You know, it's kind of like he's found the fountain of youth down there. And instead of being the number one option or two option in Brooklyn, now he can be that third guy. And Whiteside has been tremendous, you know, coming off the bench. And their young kids with Winslow and Richardson have really given him a nice boost. So they're kind of in that gray area right now. I think I need to see them a little bit more over the next, you know, next 2 weeks here.
Johnson's found a contract is what Johnson's found, okay? He's found the, I'm 34 years old, I got to put up some numbers to get some of that TV money next year. That's what Joe Johnson has found.
Well, he's also found the sun down there, too. So
yeah.
That does wonders to your
That's
body.
That's why LeBron went down there, man. Get some sun. That's what Dwayne Wade said. You know, it's nice down here in Miami, man. That's like Dwayne Wade, like, subtly in the press, putting it out there, like, you know, LeBron, it's always nice down here. I know it was snowing in Cleveland on, you know, over the weekend. It's always nice to come back here. I don't think that if LeBron ever went back to Miami or went anywhere else, he'd be more hated in Cleveland than Art Modell is. I mean, I don't think that's ever going to happen. But what do you make of these tweets that no one seems to understand, these messages sort of being sent through the press? I mean, have you seen that with other star players before? And what do you make of just what he's doing?
I haven't seen it. There's got to be a purpose to what he is doing. You know,
did it last year with Love.
He did. And so what is the message and what buttons is he looking to push here over the next, you know, few weeks and how they've played? Is not all players react well to things, and people read everything. You know, I mean, players can say, I don't read the newspapers, I don't read the internet. That's baloney. They read everything, and if they don't read it, people tell them. So
Twitter,
if Kevin Love does not read it, his agent is telling him, hey, you know, LeBron said, you know, indirectly about you, or if it's Kyrie Irving in the same way. And it's interesting where the message is and where it's going to go. And, you know, it's, you know, with LeBron, I know there is a purpose there to try to push his teammates as far as they go. Certain players just can't handle that.
Yeah, I mean, it worked last year because he tweaked Kevin Love a little bit, and then they went on that run to end the regular season. Kevin got hurt in the playoffs, and that kind of went out the door. But we'll see if it works this year.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
All right, so I got to tell you, I am hooked on these Omaha steaks. Got a package of them in the mail about a week ago. Haven't even gotten all the way through the package, but I'm telling you, when I'm done, I'm ordering a new one. Exceptional meats, great prices, and excellent customer service. Omaha Steaks, they deliver it all. Now, here's why they're so good. High quality, one-of-a-kind flavor, beef and bison from the Golden Plains, seafood, poultry, pork, veal, lamb, veggies, desserts, appetizers, pasta, soup, seasoning, sauces, more. There's really nothing that you can't get from Omaha Steaks right now. Everything backed by Omaha Steaks, 100% unconditional guarantee. Great package being offered to my listeners. Huge savings, and the box comes with great variety. Right now, when you use my code Mannix, you will get 76% off. You heard that correctly. 76% off this exclusive package. The package includes two tender mild filet mignons, two bold beefy top sirloins, two moist savory boneless pork chops, four homestyle chicken fried steaks, 15 giant Italian spice all beef meatballs, four award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, four Krispy Kreme potatoes au gratin, four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus four juicy, made from premium ground beef Omaha Steak burgers free. Just for my listeners, this exclusive package is only $49.99. It is an incredible value. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Mannix in the search bar to get this great deal. That's omahasteaks.com. Enter Mannix in the search bar to get this great package for just $49.99. I was having this debate with some people in the league the other day about just how good the coaching job is in Cleveland. Like, if it opened up tomorrow, let's say, for example, Cleveland opens up and Minnesota opens up. Is Minnesota a more appealing coaching job right now than Cleveland?
Well, it's appealing in Minnesota because you are working from the ground up and the expectation level isn't there. So you can groom, you know, Carl Anthony Towns, you know, Zach LaVine, Tyus Jones, you know,
Wiggins.
Gorgui Dieng, you know, you still have Rubio. You've got a nice influx of talent. They haven't been to playoffs in years. So you can build it how you want to do it as far as, you know, kind of put your stamp. In regards to Cleveland, you're inheriting the group there. I mean, where they are next summer, no cap space going forward. You've got LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin is still there, JR, Shumper, that group. So it's hard to mold players when they already have, you know, an exact way they want to play. So I would put the Minnesota job more appealing just because of you have more flexibility to be more creative with that roster.
If you're Minnesota and you don't throw everything at Tom Thibodeau at the end of the year, I think you're crazy. Because you talk about molding guys. I mean, that's Tibbs 101. I mean, he'll put you in the gym and he'll put you to work. And they may not like it at all times, but they'll get better as a result of it. I mean, he's clearly the cream of that coaching crop next year. I mean, I think he'd be just an incredible fit with the Timberwolves.
Well, the one thing you wouldn't have to worry about is the media poking him or management poking him about how many minutes they play, because you've got young legs there in Minnesota where, you know, this group can play 35, 40 minutes consecutively and not have the wear and tear on their bodies like we maybe saw in Chicago. But he would be the perfect fit there. You know, he can put his style of play on that young group because they don't really have an identity.
No.
And I get concerned when you keep on drafting and drafting is that eventually you got to turn the corner. And you can have as many, you know, lottery picks as you can, but two things happen. Their contract runs out, and you got to pay them or eventually figure out when to pay them. So it's not there yet in Minnesota, but it's going to get to a point where, you know, they're going to have to start turning around a little bit.
Yeah, or else it starts to infect the locker room. And the culture of losing hurts young guys. You're seeing in Orlando right now. I mean, I'm stunned that Orlando has had the fast start and then has completely deteriorated. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they lost so much last year and the last couple of years that they're almost conditioned to just give up when the going gets tough. I thought Scott Skiles would be enough to kind of push them through that a little bit, but they really are just sort of, you know, their mindset is like, when we're in a tough situation, we don't have the mental toughness to go out there and beat it. They're kind of the blueprint. They're what teams like Philadelphia and Minnesota should be scared of, because you're expected to lose now, but the next year and the year after that, when you're expected to win, you might not, largely because you were so bad and so non-competitive in previous years.
Well, Orlando, I love them on paper. And the Phoenix loss the other night is disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, how you can get down to a Suns team that is basically playing for nothing when you have a shot of, you know, trying to make the playoffs here. And, you know, they've got a nice young group with, you know, Oladipo and Vucevic. You know, you added Jennings and Ilyasova. But where is this Magic team going? That is a team that, if they don't make the playoffs, and likely probably not, they might need a makeover come July here, where some of these young pieces, and I'm not talking about Mario Hezonja and, you know, Fournier is a free agent, but, you know, what is there right now, and where? How can that team actually get better? You know, if it's, we saw they can compete with the best of the teams, but, you know, to put an 82 game, you know, season to, you know, complete season together is, you know, I don't know if this group can do that.
They just had a makeover. I mean, it's like they had one less than 2 years ago, and now we're talking about a makeover again. I think you do need veterans down there. Veterans that can play too. I mean, you had, you know, Channing Frye was there, just the back end of the bench. You need to have veterans on that roster you're giving substantial minutes to. That might mean trading a Victor Oladipo. That might mean trading not Aaron Gordon. He's part of the future there, but maybe even Vucevic if they can find a palatable option return. But you know, when you're running all these young guys out there, I thought Oklahoma City did a nice job when they were developing Durant and Westbrook, because they did put some veterans around them, guys like Nick Collison, that are great locker room guys and may not be the most substantial contributors, but they at least played. Is there value in that? Is there value in having, you know, the 8 point per game scorer who's your seventh man, but also has been in the league for 10 years?
No, there's value, and that's why we saw them trade for, you know, Jennings and Ilyasova at the deadline and move a younger player like Tobias Harris to Detroit, because their mindset was, you know, we need players come the fourth quarter that can maybe you know, veterans that can close games, and with Jennings and Ilyasova, unfortunately, that hasn't, you know, gone the, you know, the way they were hoping. So, but you need veterans. You can't just surround yourself with, you know, 23, 24 year old, you know, players, because they have not been in that, you know, that fourth quarter battle come playoff time, or, you know, trying to get into the playoffs like, you know, like some of these other guys have. So it'll be interesting with Orlando. You're not going to get another coach. You know, the rotating door, of bringing another player, another coach, is you're not going to see that. And if it does, I would be stunned, because that's a reflection on management.
We went through the trade deadline and the contenders didn't really pick up anything substantial. We finally, I think, get the first substantial move in San Antonio when they collect Kevin Martin after the buyout from Minnesota. I really like Martin in that role. I think he can actually contribute, you know, Manu Ginobili or no Manu Ginobili, because he did it, 12-13 when he was playing for Oklahoma City. He's a good guy. He came off the bench. He's a proven scorer. I think he might win a game for them in the playoffs, just being able to come off the bench for somebody with foul trouble or get hot with his shooting. I mean, I think that's a sneaky, really good acquisition by the Spurs.
Well, and what we saw with the March 1 waiver buyout is that it became more important than the actual trade deadline. You know, I like the Martin, you know, pickup in San Antonio. Andre Miller, you know, brings in another veteran. Their bench got significantly better, and they didn't really have to give up anything to do so. You didn't have to give up any picks, or, you know, you had to, you know, cut some players here. But they're going to be a tough out come playoff time, as tough as they've been in recent years. And Martin, a healthy Ginobili, gives you a different dimension that you didn't have, you know, a couple weeks ago.
I can't wait for all three of those Golden State matchups, because, you know, Pop's starting like Andre Miller, Kevin Martin, whoever their 14th man is, the big man on the end of the bench there. I mean, he's not going to play any of his guys substantial minutes in those games. Maybe one of them. Maybe one you get like a good game. But two of those final three matchups, I can't see Pop going full strength against any one of them.
Well, what Pop's probably doing now is studying the losses that Golden State's had. And the losses that they've had, you know, you take the Laker game, have been not too, you know, they have lost to some bad teams.
That's L.A. though, right? That's L.A. on Saturday night is undefeated right now. I mean, you have an afternoon game on a Sunday in L.A. I know exactly why that loss happened.
Well, Steve Kerr said it's the millennials.
Yeah.
You know, it's those young kids. They can't process, you know, that, you know, what happened there. But Golden State, you know, they've got, you know, 20 more games also to see where they go. But their schedule gets a little tough here, and it'll be interesting where they rest players and everything in that regard.
If you're Steve Kerr, how do you treat that? I mean, is there a certain point where you say, I've got to go for the record, or do you just say, you know, screw it, I'm going to sit Steph Curry for every other game, I'm going to sit Klay Thompson, I'm going to have a rotating lineup of guys that are sitting out certain games?
What happens is you lose your edge. And when I was in Brooklyn, we did that in the year we had Pierce and Garnett, 13-14, and we stagnated how, you know, guys played towards the end of the year. We got lucky, you know, we got Toronto in the first round, which was a tough series, and, you know, we wind up winning that series in seven games. But it's almost like preseason football, is that if you don't put your best product out there, and I'm not saying to play a guy 35, 40 minutes, but you have to keep guys, you know, you have to keep them going, and you can't rely on practice. So if it's a player playing 25 minutes, 30 minutes, you maybe take a little bit off that, then you have to do that going forward. The record, I know it might mean something to you know, some players. It doesn't mean anything. You know, what they want is that, you know, that championship come mid-June, and not, you know, what the Bulls did, you know, back in the 90s.
That'll rest guys in Golden State for two reasons. Number one, they're all like mid-20s. So, you know, what are you resting them for at this point regardless? Number two, you saw what happened last year in the first round. Just ran through New Orleans in the first round. Pretty good chance they do that again this year. So all of a sudden, you go through a four-game series, and you know how the NBA stretches these series out. You go through a four-game series, you're done. You might be sitting for like a week anyway, and then you're wondering, why was I resting these guys in the first place? I've got a bunch of 20-year-olds kind of sitting around with nothing to do except practice for the next week or so.
Well, and what you're going to see in the West this year is that you're going to see all four series end early. You know, there's not going to be any seven-game series, and I'll put my neck on the line for that right now. And when you look at on paper, you know, even a 4-5 series at Clippers-Memphis, you know, Memphis has no chance in that series. And all these are going to end early. So you're going to have plenty of rest right there to, you know, to recuperate, you know, your body. So The rest factor down the stretch, you know, I don't buy it. It's more for those older teams. Or if you want to, you know, pick out an opponent you want to play in April and try to, you know, set the stars up. You know how karma works sometimes. It comes back and gets you a little bit. But I'm not big on that rest factor.
Bobby, thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. You can download new and archived episodes at SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher, and really anywhere that you can download podcasts. My thanks to SeatGeek and Omaha Steaks. We'll be right back here next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice. Find your voice.